This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Anger, anger everywhere. Secretary Clinton gets mad in the Congo. Anger comes to healthcare town halls. But never fear, it's Wednesday and time for a soothing visit with the political junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
On Wednesdays, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us this week. Former GOP Senator Rick Santorum will discuss the future of the Republican Party in the heavily symbolic state of Iowa. Healthcare is causing a ruckus in town halls across the nation, and the country mourns another Kennedy, Eunice Shriver. Later, we're joined by NPR's Don Gagne. He went up to the president's town hall in Portsmouth, and we'll talk about what he saw. Plus, later in the program, how much should the government be involved in our financial decisions? Richard Posner joins us. But first, Ken Rudin joins us here in Studio 3A, just back from vacation, looking very mellow.
Hi, Lynn. It's the first time in 2 weeks I've not been wearing a bathing suit on Talk of the Nation, which is, I think America needs to know that.
And I'm glad for it.
Yes. Anyway, the trivia question this week, of course, as you know, yesterday Eunice Kennedy Shriver passed away at the age of 88. A remarkable woman. You talk about all the Kennedy men and all they accomplished, but Eunice Kennedy Shriver obviously accomplished much. But on Kennedy trivia, okay, who was the first member of the immediate Kennedy family? And I'm talking about like Eunice's siblings and her siblings' children. The first member of the immediate Kennedy family to be defeated by voters in a bid for office, either in a primary or a general election.
All right, so if you know who the first Kennedy to be defeated in their bid for office is, give us a call. Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-8255. And the email address is talk@npr.org. So, Ken, let's begin with Rick Santorum heading off to Iowa. Why?
Well, I think that has something to do with perhaps presidential politics. Now, of course, if you speak to people in Rick Santorum's office, the former Republican senator from Pennsylvania, they say that he's going to Iowa, and the visit is in Dubuque on October 1st to talk about the future of the Republican Party. Now, what interests me about this is that mostly is that all the people talking about the future of the Republican Party are people from the past of the Republican Party. We talk about Newt Gingrich, we talk about Dick Cheney, we talk about people who have been around for quite a while. And of course, Rick Santorum lost his Senate seat in 2006 by a pretty wide margin to Bob Casey in Pennsylvania, and yet he is one of these Republicans who say they have a say in the future of the Republican Party. We don't know if it's as a presidential candidate, but of course, Iowa always think of presidential politics when you think of Iowa.
Never too early to test the waters in Iowa for a presidential campaign, I guess.
Not at all.
Yeah. And also, let's turn to Senator Mel Martinez, a Republican of Florida. He's announced that he would be stepping down from his seat in Congress early. Why is that?
I mean, we knew for a while that he was going to retire. And, of course, Charlie Crist, who is the governor of Florida, has announced that he will run. And he's a front runner for the seat, although he has a conservative opponent, Marco Rubio, the former State House Speaker. And the Democrats, of course, are running candidates as well. But Mel Martinez says he wants to step down to spend more time with his family. I think American politicians must have the greatest families in the world because there are more politicians who want to leave politics to spend time with their families than I've ever heard before. So something must be up. Anyway, what this means is that Charlie Crist is going to have to name an appointed senator.
Could he name himself?
He could, and he probably won't because most people who do that, and that has happened many times, and almost everybody has happened to who appointed themselves wound up losing because the voters got so angry. Charlie Crist is too smart to do that. And of course, being challenged by a conservative in next year's primary, he may decide to pick a conservative, even though it'll be a caretaker, but a conservative just to keep the right wing happy.
Likely to pick a weak candidate for this?
Well, no, because this person won't be running for the seat because Charlie Crist himself will be running,
okay,
but somebody just to keep the seat warm until Crist runs and the Democrats put up a candidate in 2010.
All right, we've got some other dropout news here today as well. We've got Democrat Carolyn Maloney in New York announcing she won't run in the Democratic primary there. And isn't this what the Democratic political establishment in New York wanted?
Oh, and the White House as well. I mean, obviously, once Hillary Clinton left the Senate, once Governor David Patterson picked Kirsten Gillibrand to replace her in the Senate, the White House, the Democrats, Senator Charles Schumer, all wanted the Democrats to rally around Kirsten Gillibrand. Of course, Carolyn Maloney, who's a liberal congresswoman from Manhattan, who said, look, Gillibrand is not the kind of Democrat who represents us. She's conservative on guns. She's conservative on immigration. She's not the person who should represent the Democratic Party. But unfortunately for Maloney, very few Democrats were listening. She wasn't raising that much money. The establishment was clearly behind Gillibrand, and she faced the music and said, well, actually, I'm much happier in Congress.
All right, let's see if we have some people on the line who think they know the answer to the trivia question. Let's go to Shirley in Chagrin Falls, Ohio. Hi, Shirley.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead. What's your answer?
I think it was Jack Kennedy in one of his first bids.
Well, actually, no, Jack Kennedy never lost a race. He was elected to Congress in 1946, elected to the Senate in 1952 and 58, and, of course, was elected president in 1960. Jack Kennedy never lost an election.
All right, Shirley, sorry about that.
Thanks.
All right, let's go to Greg calling from Atlantic City, New Jersey. Hi, Greg.
Hi, this is Greg from Atlantic City. I was wondering if it was Ted Kennedy.
Well, Ted Kennedy did run for president, and of course, he lost a bunch of primaries. He was first elected to the Senate in 1962, and he's still serving, but he did run for president in 1980 and lost a lot of primaries to Jimmy Carter. But he was not the first Kennedy to lose an election.
All right. Sorry about that. We're going to move on to Beth, who's calling from Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Hi, Beth.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
I was going to say Kathleen, but I just. The answer from the last one tells me that that's not right either.
Well, you know, Kathleen Kennedy did run for Congress in 1986. She lost to Helen Bentley in Maryland. But again, she is not the first Kennedy. Remember, the question was in a primary or a general election. And so Kathleen Kennedy was not the first Kennedy to lose a primary or a general election.
All right. Thanks for your call, Beth. Mm-hmm. And in an email here, we have a guess from Tom. He says, I believe it was Sergeant Shriver. Is that right?
Well, Sergeant Shriver did run for vice president in 1972. He was a Democratic nominee after Tom Eagleton withdrew from McGovern ticket. But Sergeant Shriver is not the correct answer.
All right. I want to move on to the Clintons now, from the Kennedys to the Clintons. Hillary Clinton had an awkward moment, I guess you might call it, in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, where she lashed out at a student who asked for her husband Bill Clinton's opinion. It seemed like the student was asking for her husband Bill Clinton's opinion on China's role there. Let's listen to that tape.
Wait, you want me to tell you what my husband thinks? My husband is not the Secretary of State. I am. So you ask my opinion, I will tell you my opinion. I'm not going to be channeling my husband.
Channeling my husband. Yes. She doesn't sound very happy.
Well, she wasn't. And if you actually see the video, and you can see the video on my blog, Political Junkie, it looks like she's very, very perturbed. But there were a lot of explanations of this. First of all, the actual question given by a student from the Congo apparently was about President Obama's reaction to Chinese influence in the Congo. And it was translated as Mr. Clinton instead of Mr. Obama. But also a lot of people saying that what Hillary Clinton has gone through, there is a tremendous amount of sexual discrimination, abuse of women, sexual crimes against women in the Congo, and she's been dealing with that all week. So perhaps she just felt this was just another either attack on women or feminism or whatever, but she actually reacted pretty testily. But a lot of people say that, you know, what she's been learning about the conditions for women in Africa has just been horrific this week. So,
well, do you think there'll be any fallout from this, or this is just going to blow over?
I think apparently she and the student understood each other, and of course it's something that will blow over. But of course that YouTube video has been played countless times, and people just deciding either this is typical Hillary Clinton, who we don't like, or good for Hillary Clinton because she stood up to, you know, a misogynist question.
Yeah. Okay, back to in the news this week, Karl Rove and the U.S. attorney scandal back again in the news.
Well, these are about these U.S. attorneys who were of President Bush's who were fired ostensibly by then Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez in 2006. Karl Rove, who was President Bush's longtime political aide, said from the beginning that he was really not involved in this at all, but emails now show that he was very interested in the removal of these U.S. attorneys, especially David Iglesias, who was the U.S. attorney in New Mexico, who apparently wasn't battling alleged Democratic vote fraud strongly enough. Now, these U.S. attorneys serve at the pleasure of the president, so there's no reason, you know, there's no crime here that they were fired. But the fact is that there may be some lying going on to congressional committees, if that's the case, because from the beginning, Karl Rove said he had no involvement in their dismissal, and emails show that he may have.
All right, let's see if we have anybody else on the line who thinks they know the answer to the trivia question. Chet in Philadelphia. Hi, Chet.
Oh, hi.
Go ahead.
I think the answer would be Robert Kennedy in 1968 in Indiana.
And to where, I'm sorry?
Robert Kennedy in Indiana?
No, actually, Robert Kennedy won the Indiana primary. That was the first primary he entered after he became a presidential candidate, and he won the Indiana primary.
Oh, boy. Well, then it was one of those in 68 he lost. Wait a minute, was it Oregon?
Well, we have two chances from, you got it on the second answer. That's correct. Oregon primary in May of 1968, Robert Kennedy did lose to Eugene McCarthy, the first defeat by Kennedy.
That was in Oregon.
Oregon.
We have a winner.
All right, we have a winner. Thanks, Chet.
We'll keep Chet on the line because we'll get his name and number, and he gets a Political Junkie T-shirt, which is very exciting.
Very exciting, Chet.
Thank you very much.
So hold on, and we'll get your name. All right. And just one more thing I wanted to chat with you about before the break. Senator Chris Dodd needs surgery.
Well, he had surgery. He had prostate cancer. The surgery went yesterday morning, according to everybody involved. It went very, very well. He's resting comfortably, and he'll be released from the hospital in a couple of days, so apparently it was a success. Okay. He's in a very tough battle for re-election next year.
All right, great. NPR's political editor Ken Rudin is with us here in Studio 3A, and you can read his Political Junkie blog at thenewnpr.org, and he'll stay with us. And up next, we'll be talking about the anger that's boiling over at many of the town hall meetings on health care. If you've been to one of the recent town halls, what did you see? Give us a call at 800-989-8255. Or drop us an email. The address is talk@npr.org. I'm Lynn Neary, and it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Over this beautiful land, and take over this beautiful land, and take over this beautiful land. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington, and Ken Rudin is back after a week of summer vacation. He's NPR's political editor, but you might know him best as the Political Junkie on this show and on his blog. You'll find that at npr.org/junkie. For the rest of the segment, we're going to talk about the seething anger that we've seen in some of the discussion over health care. We've seen members of Congress face-to-face with screaming constituents in the last few days. If you went to one of the town hall meetings on health care, tell us why and what did you see? Give us a call at 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Don Gagne is NPR's White House correspondent, and he just got back from the president's town hall meeting in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. He's also here with us in Studio 3A. Good to have you, Don.
Glad to be here. Felt like the campaign yesterday.
Wow. It's been kind of rowdy in town halls around the country this past week. But what was it like at the president's town hall yesterday in Portsmouth?
Okay. The day started out just as you would expect on this hugely volatile issue this year. People start amassing outside the high school auditorium, Portsmouth High School, 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, many hours before the 1 p.m. event is going to start. And by 10:30, it's at a fever pitch. You walk down the middle of the road, and you've got the anti-healthcare change types on one side to your right. You've got the pro healthcare change groups on the other, and they're like chanting in sync, but chanting their opposite cheers, and you can get vertigo walking down the center of the street. And there's, you know, everything that you've heard, you know, Nazi symbols and signs that say President Obamadinejad, and the other side holding up healthcare now signs and all that. But once we got inside, it was not at all like the events that we've seen with angry people in the face of their senator or congressman. It was just overwhelmingly civil in there. There are a lot of reasons for that. I mean, this is the president and not a congressman.
Were they invited? Was it, it made you think there was an invited audience. But maybe.
About two-thirds, 70%, the White House says, of the tickets were distributed randomly by people who submitted a request to the White House webpage. They have a special page that handles these. A couple of more town halls coming up this weekend, so people in Montana and Colorado will get a chance to go through the same process. The White House insists that these tickets are handed out randomly. And then about 30% of the tickets are distributed by elected officials, unions. That is the core that you would expect to be the friendly the friendly Obama healthcare backers. But the other 70%, they say, was random. But when the president walked in, you know, standing ovation, big cheers, a good percentage of the crowd wearing Healthcare Now stickers. So, what happens is when it's not a presidential event, if you just decide you want to have the first 400 people in line, you can get your group together and be the first ones in line and be guaranteed to get in. This is a much more diffuse way of getting people in the door. So it means that it's very hard to organize something on the inside.
Now, one of the very emotional issues surrounding the healthcare debate deals with the end of life. Mm-hmm. And the president addressed some of the rumors we've been hearing about that in Portsmouth.
The rumor that's been circulating a lot lately is this idea that somehow the House of Representatives voted for death panels that will basically pull the plug on grandma because we've decided that it's too expensive to let her live anymore.
Now, I wonder, and Ken, you can join in this as well, but do you think that answer is going to satisfy those people who have the answer that he gave in Portsmouth is going to satisfy the critics?
It's not going to satisfy the people who were out on the street protesting, right, holding up signs that said, you know, live free but die on my schedule, you know, and things like that. But again, he is speaking to the middle, and he does not want them to be swayed away from reforms. And it was interesting, too, he was not asked about that at the town hall.
He brought it up himself.
He was asked, the question, I believe, was like an 11 or 12-year-old girl to ask a question, wondering why people are saying so many mean things. That was the totality of the question. And he brought up one of those mean things and then knocked it down. And he did that throughout the event. He would raise something that hadn't been asked that you could tell he really wanted to get his side of it on the record in this forum.
Ken?
Don, the political aspect of this whole thing is that the president's numbers have certainly been declining from the mid-60s to the mid-50s. A lot of people ascribe that to his decline in support about health care change. The president seemed to me, at least, to be more on the defensive going into Portsmouth and talking about what these plans will not include.
Exactly. And again, he spent a good chunk of it knocking down rumors and
misstatements
and misinformation. And that is part of the goal of it. Now, a chunk of it, too, was people standing up, saying, well, what about my prescription drugs? I take Lipitor, and sometimes I have a hard time getting coverage for it. What will it mean for that? I mean, you got some very specific questions. But his goal was really to go on the offensive against a lot of these rumors and the misinformation that he says is out there.
Robert Gibbs, the press secretary, said this is manufactured anger. But you've been watching these town hall meetings, the Spectre one and the McCaskill one. There is real legitimate anger out
people
there.
People are mad.
But what is it they're mad at? Is it healthcare that they're really that riled up about, or is it something larger than that?
It does seem to be something larger than that. I mean, if you work the crowd as I did yesterday, you do find a lot of people who are angry about the growing federal deficit, about TARP funds. I had people tell me they didn't think Barack Obama was born in the United States. So it is another issue where a lot of that broader dislike and anger toward him is channeled.
All right, let's see if we can get a listener in here. John from Algoma, Wisconsin. Go ahead.
I attended a listening session for our congressman who is Dr. Kagan in the 8th District in Northeast Wisconsin. And I have to say that I was taken aback by what took place in that high school gymnasium. I had not been listening to the news a great deal and was unaware of how noisy these events had been, and was quite surprised that there were people shouting out while he moved around and took questions from everyone, or nearly everyone. Certainly didn't seem to be cherry-picking people out of the group at all, and there were plenty of critics. There were also people who shouted at him or tried to shout down his answers, and I found that very distressing, I guess. I had some questions to ask him and tried to ask them in a calm fashion. I'm not 100% sold on the program that's evolving in Congress, but he did an interesting thing of asking how many people in the audience were recipients of Medicare, and better than half of the people raised their hands and then went on to ask how many people were happy with their Medicare benefits, and nearly all of those people raised their hands that they were happy. And then he asked how many people were interested in federal government involvement in the delivery of medical services or in taking care of providing medical care, and two people raised their hands. So there seems to be a great deal of confusion. And I saw people sitting in the audience with a great number of printouts from websites, including OperationEmbarrassYourCongressman.org and several others, that were just loaded for bear. They came with questions that had been provided to them by others. And there were a lot of sleepers in the audience. So I was really rather distressed. It really wasn't a local community meeting, and people were misrepresenting who they were.
All right, John, thanks so much for your call. And do you know this organization that John just mentioned? Or?
I don't know that one, no.
All right. Let's take another call now. We're going to go to Reed, who's calling from Havana, Florida.
Good afternoon, Wayne. I have not yet attended one of these, but I fully intend to attend, Congressman Boyd's town hall meeting in Quincy, Florida, in the next couple of days. Congressman Boyd is a Blue Dog Democrat, but he has demonstrated remarkable representation for this area. I am not anticipating anything like we've seen, this embarrassing thing we've seen in a lot of these town hall meetings, because Congressman Boyd is well respected here. Now, that being said, I'm wondering, does that really matter anymore? Congressman Boyd will demonstrate conservative fiscal restraint, but he is also a supporter of health care reform. Does your guest believe that even somebody like Congressman Boyd in a sparsely populated area like North Florida, where he represents, will he feel the brunt of this Republican onslaught of people filing in to affect his town hall meeting?
All right, let's see if Ken.
Well,
we saw an instance
last month. Frank Cradiville, the freshman Democrat from Maryland, very conservative district. Cradiville is hardly a liberal. I think he's a Blue Dog Democrat. There was a cardboard cutout of Congressman Cradiville hung in effigy. And so it doesn't matter if you're conservative, liberal, but it just seems like there's an anger out there. And it goes back to the earlier question. I think it's part of all the government, and we talk about socialism and all that stuff, but we do see an instance of an administration with bailouts on AIG and the auto industry and the Freddie and Fannie and all that thing. And I think people are being easily frightened with misinformation.
Now, I want to play some tape to give people a sense of what it is we're talking about, because as the president held his town hall meeting in Portsmouth, New Hampshire yesterday, Senator Arlen Specter was dealing with a very emotional crowd in Lebanon, Pennsylvania. I want to listen to one gentleman who was very angry because he didn't get a chance to ask a question. Here he is.
So I'll leave, and you can do whatever the hell you're pleased to do. One day God's going to stand before you, and he's going to judge you and the rest of your damn cronies up on the hill. And then you will get your just desserts.
A lot of emotion there. Now, I know, Don, you weren't there, but that's an example of the kind of, really heated sort of passion that we're hearing.
And we have been seeing that in town hall after town hall. In the Detroit suburb of Romulus, Congressman John Dingell, the lion of the House, the senior member, ranking Democrat in the House, has been fighting for health care reforms for his entire decade. And he encountered an angry crowd. And what we heard in that tape, what we saw in the Dingell event, and what we've seen in some others is people are able to get like within inches of the elected official and really get in their face. And whether it's just pure anger or intimidation or whatever it is, the contrast that we saw in Portsmouth yesterday at the president's event was very, very different. I mean, perhaps there's just more respect for a president of the United States.
And Secret Service, probably, too.
There are the Secret Service there, and you cannot physically
get
close. You also can't bring signs in to a presidential event.
I just want to let everybody know that you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to Jennifer, and Jennifer's calling from St. Louis. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I went to Senator McCaskill's town hall, and she had initially planned one in University City, which is one of the suburbs here in St. Louis, and that was actually canceled because of security concerns. So she held another one in a different location, and it was pretty civil, but they also, security was pretty tight, that signs weren't allowed in. But also I think Senator McCaskill did a very good job of kind of controlling the Q&A of the crowd. And then she also, at one point, one man said that he really wanted just, keep government out of my health care, and that got a lot of applause. And then I thought she did a really smart thing. She asked, everybody who was on Medicare to raise their hands, and then she said everybody who wants their, to get rid of their Medicare, keep your hands up, and everybody put their hands down. And then she kind of had to school the crowd that Medicare is, in fact, government health care. And some people booed. They didn't believe her.
What I thought was most impressive about McCaskill, and certainly compared to the way Arlen Specter dealt with the crowd, is that when there was some catcalls directed at McCaskill, she said, look, I'm the mother of two or three, I don't know what the answer was, two or three teenage boys, so I know how to deal.
Right.
I know how to deal with teenagers.
Mother boys.
And I thought that was very, very effective, whereas Specter looked like completely befuddled, like he just didn't seem to have control of what was going. Of course, the anger directed at Specter was far worse than what McCaskill faced, but it was very interesting, different ways of handling the crowds.
Thanks so much for your call, Jennifer. And do you think that any of the anger directed at Senator Specter had to do with the fact that he left the Republican Party and went to the Democratic Party?
I mean,
is that...
Well, they look, he's up for re-election next year, and the left doesn't like him, and the right doesn't like him, and that could be part of it, too.
And some people said that specifically, too. Someone would stand up and say, I'm a Republican, and you deserted us.
Yeah. Let's see if we can get one more call in here. We're going to go to Mark in Las Vegas. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. You had asked the question earlier of the two gentlemen, was there anything else that may be provoking all the anger?
Yeah.
And they had mentioned the TARP fund and the deficit, the growing deficit. And to me, I think that, number one, a lot more people are asking, is there something else that other than healthcare that is causing this anger? And I think that everyone is skirting around it, but I think that the first black president is really fueling a lot of this anger that's out there right now. That's my feeling. I think it's beyond healthcare, TARP funds.
You think it's race? Is that what you're saying, Mark?
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. I mean, people can say all they want, well, it's the healthcare. Because number one, the healthcare that what he's trying to do with the healthcare, it's going to benefit most Americans. There's no doubt about it. And I understand that a lot of people are mad for the simple fact because he's going after the insurances, and the there's a lot of money involved.
Mark, I'm going to ask our guest, because we don't have too much time left to respond, because you've raised a pretty potent point here. Don Gagne, is race playing a role in all
this? Well, you don't see overt evidence of it, particularly at an event like yesterday, but race is an issue in this country. We know it has not gone away.
But, I mean, look, whatever factor race plays, remember in 1993, 94, there were demonstrations against the Clinton health care. I remember in 1994, people banging on Dan Roskinkowski's car in Chicago, and it wasn't a thing about race, but to discount it completely, I guess I can't do that.
Well, we're going to be talking more about this anger and what's driving it on tomorrow's show. But thanks to both of you for your time today.
It's a pleasure.
Good to have you. Don Gagne is White House correspondent at NPR. We also talked with our political editor, the political junkie, Ken Rudin. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.